of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we're starting off today's show as we take a moment to actually, first of all, share I can't find the right word, but we want to acknowledge the tragedy that happened in Christchurch, the what was clearly a terror attack in Christchurch on the two mosques there, and the 49 Muslims who were killed as a result of that, at least 49 at the time of recording.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are folks in hospital still. For our listeners on Free FM or in Hamilton, we are sending you all of the good thoughts. There's not much more we can do really from all the way in Ottawa.
Yeah.
But, you know, it got me thinking about when there was the attack in Ottawa on the Parliament, the guy that shot the guard, I forget his name.
Right, yeah.
At the War Memorial.
Two guards got shot. One was in the leg, but he pulled through, yeah.
Yeah. And then the guy went and it was a sergeant of arms, ironically, that killed him off.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what really made me... What I can only really empathize from my experience with that, and you know, the whole country was affected, but the city had a chill down the spine, nowhere near the scale and the ferocity of what happened in Christchurch. But you know, it was in the days that followed the coming together of community in Ottawa, and just the rejection of the ideology, the ideas, the you know, essentially saying, you know, we won't be cowed by this act.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the day after you could still walk up to the front door of Parliament, you mm-hmm. know, you could still go and look at the War Memorial and pay your respects. You know, the fact that the community was like, we see your attempt to terrorize us. And we reject that. And there was similar events in Toronto, in London, all over the place. And we really hope, and I believe that the folks in Christchurch and New Zealand as a whole, especially the incredible words from their Prime Minister, really saying that, you know, this is not a New Zealand value. This is not something that such a compassionate country as New Zealand is accepts. It's not an acceptable message at all by yeah. any stretch. So yeah, we wanted to just take the moment to start the show with addressing that. Yeah.
Yeah. We did speak at length about this before the show. And something that I feel very strongly about is just rejecting extremism in all of its forms. The more I disagree with someone, the more I feel I need to listen to them so that I can understand them. You can listen to someone and understand them and still disagree with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but it's a very important way of centering yourself, in that I think a lot of these incidents, if people just took the time to learn about the people that they think they hate, they would see they're probably wrong or they're probably misattributing, that there's mm-hmm. some real event that happened, but they're saying that event happened over there, and so therefore these innocent people over here who are just doing grocery shopping are clearly representatives of that. And that's not at all how the world works, and it's not reasonable, and that's not at all how a decent, compassionate human being should carry out their day.
Well, I mean, the issue is Islamophobia, and the comparison between homophobia and Islamophobia. And the way that people have been dehumanized, they've been stereotyped, you know, really created into villains, is not that unlike how gay men have been treated in the mm. past, you know? I give you the example of, you know, there has been, I think it was the Boone case in Ottawa. Something Boone, Jason Boone, Jordan Boone?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was like 8-9 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the idea that it was this gay man who specifically targeted young, vulnerable men who were presumably gay with the sole intention of infecting them with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh my God, gay men with HIV are monsters. And it was that it took a while to disassociate the monstrous act of this one man from gay men with HIV. And I think that, you know, there have been gay men that have done monstrous acts.
Oh, yeah.
There have been Muslims that have done monstrous acts. 9/11. I mean, that's actually been really widely painted over all Muslims ever since. And I think we need to make considerable efforts to disassociate these monstrous acts done by monstrous people from all folks who share identities similar to that.
I mean, every time this sort of thing comes up, I'm always reminded of the, I think it was 1998 comedy routine by Eddie Izzard. His executive transvestite routine, if you remember that. And he was talking about how there was a homeless man in Central Park who's going around assaulting people. And then when they found where he slept at night, among his stash was just a wide collection of women's shoes that he had definitely been wearing himself. And they're saying, well, of course he's crazy. He's a transvestite. And Eddie Izzard, who's also a transvestite, was saying, no. He's a weirdo transvestite. There are such a thing, like that's a separate issue. The transvestite and the weirdo, put a wedge between them. Those are separate. And then he went on this whole thing about how he's an executive transvestite and how he's got things to do and places to be and he's wearing power suits. And I love Eddie Izzard. He's hilarious. But it's just this idea of separating that, you know, like, you know, gay men with HIV who are also monsters. I've met some.
Yeah.
You know, the weird phenomenon of the gift, and it's so gross. But that is a separate issue. That is someone who is a messed up individual who then acquired HIV and then adapted to their status by being messed up.
I mean, it is unfortunate that in this world we have what can only be described as monstrous people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the killer in, you know, the murderous terrorist that attacked these mosques in Christchurch.
Yeah.
Is not what, you know, there's been outrage of the Daily Mail called him an angelic-faced boy who turned, but he's not angelic, he is monstrous in his actions. And I think that we, you know, we can't disassociate the fact that that happened. You know, it's really difficult because there's been talk before, I think, oh my gosh, what's his name? Owen Jones, who he interviewed before, did an op-ed that's kind of been circulating about how the gay community needs to get behind folks fighting Islamophobia. And essentially, I think his whole point was, you know, the tools, the mechanisms, the stereotypes, you know, they might be slightly different, you know, gay men infecting all of everybody. But that sort of ideology, the methodology of dehumanizing, demonizing people based on a few examples of monstrous people and making that to be what all people who share X value equal. You know, do I believe that, you know, every white person in Australia is now this the same as this monstrous person from, I think it's from Grafton.
New Zealand.
No, the guy was from Australia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, do I now believe that all white people from Grafton, I think it was Grafton, Australia, are like this? Absolutely not. You know, but I do also believe that there is an accountability, a sort of inward looking that needs to be taken, that needs to happen. I don't know. There has been talk before about why would the LGBT community, you know, why should we step up and fight Islamophobia? Where are the Muslims fighting for LGBT rights?
I think I would just lump it under the general umbrella of the need for anyone who has suffered any form of bigotry of any type to support anyone else who suffered any kind of bigotry of any type. And this is a very relevant and modern wing of that, but for sure, I mean, any kind of anti-bigotry, anything whatsoever. I mean, the fact that, like, I think the history of Japanese internment in North America needs to be better taught and better understood. I think the residential schools need to be better taught and better understood. I think a lot of these issues, it's just anti-bigotry in general. And I mean, some of the things about learning, like, the historical impact of the Muslim world on the modern world. So, I mean, I'm a big science nerd, and you cannot acknowledge science without acknowledging the fact that for about 600 years, science was the Muslim world. So things like alcohol, alkaline substances, algebra, algorithms. I don't know if you've spotted a pattern so far. But these are all developments and discoveries of the Muslim world that we would not be able to have now. I mean, rose water extractions is how gin is made. Mm-hmm. And you and I both have a history with gin. And we can thank that, you know, due to Persian scientists in the, I think it was 13th century or something like that. So, I mean, I try to learn as much as I can about all the different communities and cultures and organizations and everything in the world to try to better understand, like, where do we fit relative to them? How do they fit into the grand arc of history? Not everything has to be about the grand arc of history. Sometimes it's just like, what was their contribution to, I don't know, jazz, whatever.
Yeah.
Something that I like. How are they involved? Mm-hmm. Or even just, you know, what, how did things change? Because, you know, every time anybody says, you know, Iran is doing this, that, or the other thing, I'm like, oh, but not Tehran. Because Tehran is just so progressive, they leave,
you know, Iran, Silicon Valley, the Iranian people are not the state of Iran.
They're not. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So, you know, grouping a whole bunch of people together, a whole religion together, you know, a whole, it's abhorrent. It's ridiculous. And actually, it's interesting because we talked before about how Milo Yiannopoulos was banned from Australia.
Right.
Well, then, briefly, a couple of days ago, from when we were recording, he was unbanned.
Okay.
Because there were advocates of free speech being like, you know, we don't get very far without hearing those discourses.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, the reason why they had banned him was the, like, you know, it's not a right to come to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a privilege. And if you're here just to stir trouble, if you're here just to share awful views and instigate violence, then we don't want you. Why would we pay for the bother of having you here? Anyway, he's now been banned again. Because the ABC News in Australia reported that he had called Islam barbaric and alien, dehumanizing the practice of Islam.
Right.
And amongst
all of it, all of Islam.
And he called him a barbaric and alien after the terror incident in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So he was then promptly banned.
Right.
Essentially being like, you're part of the problem on this, you know? And that really speaks to the issue that, you know, the language of, you know, there has been, and I will admit this, there have been cases of gay men who have been pedophiles.
Oh, yeah.
It's a thing. But does that mean that all gay men are pedophiles? Absolutely not.
Yeah. I actually find myself defending Christianity sometimes, which is bizarre. And I know where that comes from. It's because of the Westboro Baptist Church. People look at the WBC and they're like, well, that's just how Christians do. Or they look at the Catholic Church and they say, that's how Christians do. So, I mean, it's a general thing of being like, no, you got to pay attention. Mm. Like, you know, the Quakers were integral in the Underground Railroad in the 1800s. And you look at things like, I don't know, like flood relief and famine relief efforts in the 80s not flood relief.
The LGBT
drought relief.
Refugee programs in Canada that have been instrumental in making Canada one of the most effective countries at rehoming LGBT refugees from across the world.
The Unitarians are a cornerstone of that. Not
is
entirely.
Based entirely on the church sponsorship model.
Yeah.
You know, the faith has had so much importance. And to call... Well,
it's also worthy acknowledging that you can't just say Islam.
Because you can't say that Islam is abhorrent. Because there are certainly certain practitioners. There are certainly some esoteric practices that are abhorrent.
There's
people
who
entire religion is so vast.
There's people who don't realize that Islam has had its own internal divisions, just like Christianity has, where you've got, like, you know, the papists and the non-papists and the reformers and the Lutherans and it goes on like that. And there's other divisions like that. I think there's something like 12, I think, sects in Islam. I may have made that number up. But I know, like, even Judaism has four major branches to it that are very different from each other, and each of them have subdivisions, and it goes on. So saying all of Islam, I don't know, that's like saying, I don't know, like, every single individual person in Finland is just hot garbage. And it's like, but have you, first of all, have you met them all? Second of all, that's one large blanket. And mm-hmm. secondly, like, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure there are people in Finland who are hot garbage, but you're going to blame the entire country?
None of our listeners from Finland.
Oh, they...
I don't know if we have listeners in Finland.
They probably know someone, yeah. Yeah.
I bet they know. I know some folks in Canada are definitely hot garbage, oh, that's for sure.
Well, we know some who are hot messes.
Oh, well, I'm garbage.
Yeah.
I think when I tell you later, you're going to know exactly who I'm thinking of. Anyway, so we're going to jump to a song. We wanted to play a New Zealand artist. This is Lady Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of Lady Hawk's most recent songs. It was a couple of years ago still, but it's called Wild Things, and we'll be back just after this. To CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I wanted to start off with a story about Pi Day a couple of days ago.
Pi Day.
It was actually a queer person of color in Google is now just like nailed a massive number of new pi numbers. Side story. But what I wanted to talk about is a friend of ours, Doug Kerr.
Actually very excited if they've added more numbers onto pi.
But that's not what we're going to talk about. Aww. I'm going to talk about Doug Kerr, a friend of ours at the Glad Day Bookshop in Toronto.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Had a surprise pie delivery at the Glad Day Bookstore.
Okay.
And it was from the Affirm United group, the LGBTQ United Church group. They dropped off an affirming pie.
An affirming pie.
Yeah, it's a pie to affirm the importance of... Well, it was just an affirming pie.
You know, I've actually done that. There have been a couple times in my life. Somebody did something for me that they didn't need to do. They went out of their way. And my first instinct was get them a bouquet of flowers. And then I was like, you know what? No. So twice I've gotten somebody an entire lemon meringue pie just to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something. It went over very, very well both times. The first time...
Bouquet of flowers, they die. They can't eat them.
Right? And the pie, she was like, oh, we're going to eat this right now. And I'm like, but you have a job. Like, I dropped in unannounced on your place of work. And she's like, I'm going to get forks. You and I are going to eat this. It's going to be a great day. Like, honestly, get somebody a thank you pie. It works.
So what was really interesting about this is that this isn't a news story, but it was a community person, a community leader that we follow, who was like, we got pie. And other people chipping in like, oh my God, they just dropped off pie at Rainbow Railroad. Which is the LGBT charity that brings in refugees.
Right.
And apparently this group...
How did they find the location? It's a secret location.
Well, their office has a publicly listed address. You know, and yeah, so the group were handing out pies at various queer agencies and things. And they held their own pie event. So I looked into it and... they are an independent movement of the United Church of Canada.
Okay.
They believe that God loves all, and they help ministries people become affirming, which is a journey towards being publicly, intentionally, and explicitly inclusive of people of all sexual orientations, gender identities, and expressions. So they're really about, you know, being effectively proactive on engaging on the love of God, but also working with folks who are you know, of all genders and sexual orientations. And they give pie.
Yeah. I mean...
Well, in this case.
Yeah. I mean, not to me, unfortunately, because it'll make me very sick.
This is true.
Unless it's some kind of, like, tapioca starch crust or something like that.
Or, like, gluten-free pie.
Yeah, no, I got the problems. But, yeah, no, the United and Unitarian and half of the Anglican Church of Canada historically have been very chill about this. They're like, oh, you're a lesbian? That's cool, man. Just... you know, come in and enjoy the service. It's all good. But, so, I mean, there's a difference between being, like, chill and accepting, which they have been for, like, 20, maybe 30 years, depending on how you're counting it. And there's another thing to being, like, outgoing and doing outreach and being welcoming and going out of your way to be, like, you know, you've probably heard this about us. By the way, this is, you know, you're good folks. I don't know. This is... And I like that they did it with pie as well, because it's just, I don't know, it's like dropping in on somebody and just giving them a surprise cake.
Yeah, well, it literally was. It was just pie. And it wasn't a press release. We didn't hear about this from, you know, a tweet or, it was somebody Facebook posting it. But it wasn't like they're going out there being like, we're so cool and welcoming, here's pie.
I mean, here's the thing, though. It says in the Bible, charity isn't charity if you brag about it after.
But
the person who receives the charity can brag on your behalf. That's totally cool. That's
true. I don't know if giving pie counts as charity, but we'll...
Well, I mean, this...
Let us know what you think. At TalkCanQueer, is giving pie charity? apparently, they don't work exclusively with the United Church. If you want to get involved, check out their website and get more information that way. www.ause.ca. We're not being paid to promote them. I just thought it's really cool that they just went around on Pi Day.
Giving out pie.
And just give out pies.
Throwing pie.
What a cool, friendly thing to do.
I want to know who else they gave pie to.
Well, we don't know. We only know about those two. If you got a pie from the affirming group, let us know. Affirm United. We'd love to know any further pie-related details. Would be grand.
It's a nice, simple, but great story.
Yeah, so I don't think we really have time. We're going to talk about that one, but there's a whole bunch of other little stories I wanted to talk about. The Canadian Gay and Lesbian Archives, which is the largest archive of LGBTQ2+ life in Canada, apparently has big announcements under the way. We will have some folks looking into it to share it with you. I know they've done group discussions on whether or not they should be launching a museum or other spaces to exhibit their works. We are really hopeful about what happens next with them, yeah. And we'll share with them.
As I hope it is a museum, because I know that they have... We've met three, I think, of their archivists over the years, and one of them, I do recall, has training in curating, because I remember this was before they refurbished the Museum of Canadian History here in Ottawa, and I was complaining, it's the worst curated museum I've ever been to in my entire life. Apparently it's better now. I don't know. I'm yet to go and check it out. I'm very skeptical. But anyway, curation is a very difficult thing, and I really hope that they take it seriously. I mean, if they do it, I'm sure they're going to take it more seriously than any other organization in Canada. But I really hope that they do have the opportunity and the funding and the support to put together a good museum, because I trust in their ability to curate a good exhibit. Did I step on you? I'm sorry.
No, I hurt my foot.
But... it's just on the floor.
Yeah, no, it's a thing.
You heard it on the air.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good old sharp, pointy air.
So I wanted to divert a moment to the next mixture of conversation. Is a lot of people are talking about Sam Smith, the musician, who was a gay guy, but now in an interview with Jamila Jamil, has now become identified as gender queer. And I think that what's really interesting about this is not necessarily that famous gay singer now rejects gender binary. I think that's like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. You know, I'm not that guy, doesn't really affect my life in any way.
Right, yeah.
But what I think is really interesting here was reading over the interview, it was more about sort of rejecting the binary. And I think we've talked about this a bit in the past.
Okay.
And I think it actually makes for a really interesting discussion, because I spoke with a mutual friend of ours who runs a small business in Ottawa.
Okay.
You know the lady.
Yeah.
And they were saying to me, you know, I am masculine, bit of a tomboy. I think I'm genderqueer. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sometimes a man, and you know, sometimes I'm a woman, and a part of me is like, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're trying to empathize, trying to bridge the gap, trying to explain that your identity isn't a Victorian age binary of woman and man, but rather you are a more complicated being. And I'm like, I see this, I understand where you're coming from, but you're using language that has a specific meaning in the LGBT community.
Well, I think part of it is that this is a gradient issue, and I think it's... Okay, so years ago, before my father passed away, he asked me at one point in time, what is this thing with genderqueer? What does it mean to not identify? And so I said, some people don't really feel like the gender binary fits with them. You know, they may be, you know, biologically male, but they don't really identify that. They don't get masculine culture. They don't feel they fit in with masculinity. They might feel that they fit in both with masculinity and in feminine spaces, or neither, or maybe it's complicated. And he kind of looked at me and said, I think that's literally everyone.
Yeah.
And then I said, that's, first of all, wonderful insight for like this French Canadian lumberjack who was very rough and tumble. You actually met him a couple times.
I think so, yeah.
But the difference is this lack of clear distinction and lack of fitting in with something strong enough to you that it's a part of your identity?
Exactly.
Is it just something about you that's true? Because I also acknowledge that I barely fit into the masculine group, and I don't identify with masculinity. I don't identify with femininity.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, genderness doesn't really, I don't identify one way or another. It's not important to me. So I'm not going to say that I'm genderqueer because it's not something that overrides other parts of my being.
Absolutely. I mean, let's take a moment here for our listeners. You know, we're talking about, you know, let's define what it means to be manly. You know, I should do the sports and like the sports and have a six pack and broad shoulders and do manly work like a lumberjack or what have you.
Well, the other thing is, like, do you define man as being not a woman? Are you defining...
But in that case, how are you defining woman?
Well, I mean, the other thing is, are you defining man as being not a boy? Because you could talk about, like, adultness and masculinity versus masculinity as being the opposite of femininity. Like, I found it to be more constructive for myself to view masculinity as being not a boy. So boys are into boobs and beer and video games because it's all about consuming. What do I want? Putting things inside my body, giving myself pleasure. Whereas, like, for me, masculinity as an adult is all about creating. It's about generating. It's about nurturing. It's about supporting. You know?
Fatherhood, for example.
Yeah, fatherhood. You know, children drink beer and play sports. Adults build empires, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not an empire because that's... They build businesses.
Adults also drink beer and sports and boobs and all that jazz.
Like, I view an entrepreneur as being, like, a very strong form of masculinity, more so than, like, an athlete or somebody with a six-pack, you know? But I also don't have a normal view of what it means.
Yeah, and I think this is literally the issue, you know, are we saying that the athlete with a six-pack can't identify as genderqueer? Maybe the athlete with a six-pack doesn't like the fact that he's expected to wear suits at formal events. Maybe he doesn't like the fact that in his sport, his costume is not costume, what's the word, uniform involves X, Y, Z. You know, and that's the thing. You know, I like the Monty Python skit about I'm a lumberjack and I'm all...
Oh, yes.
And then, you know, in panties and a bra.
Joke, yeah.
Yeah. But I think that really hits the nail on the head with this one. In that case, that guy, you know, the lumberjack there is, you know, the joke is very dated, but the whole point is that the lumberjack is a guy who wears a bra, maybe that's what he feels comfortable in for whatever reason.
He also presses flowers.
Absolutely.
Yes, I remember.
Flower pressing.
I remember the song very well.
But those are... The bra wearing is particularly effeminate because one would assume women would have the materials to fill a bra.
I mean, you could also be overweight.
That's, well, yeah, true.
That's called a bro.
Is that really what it's called?
The jokingly, a supportive device bro. For men with large pecs due to body fat issues. It's called a bro. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of... I have...
Which don't exist in the real world, by the way. It's a joke device that I think it showed up on Seinfeld or something like that.
You know? I have opinions on that. But that's but the issue here is nobody really is so Victorian old school that there is all things woman and all things man. It's like living your life according to how French has gendered things. It's ridiculous.
French has gendered things according to rhyme. All the masculine words rhyme with the masculine words. It's a sound pattern thing. It's got nothing to do. Anyway, it's a different issue.
But you know, it's
actually that is not an unrelated issue because it just shows that it's all stupid and arbitrary.
It's untenable. And then we get normal everyday people who are like, so does that mean I'm trans now? Because I don't, like, you know, I don't wear a suit. I like to just wear, you know, I think it's just halftime or something.
I think it's just an extension of this mistake. It's a very human mistake. We all do it to some degree where we view ourselves as being lost and confused and everybody else in the room has their stuff together. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They understand it. I don't believe that gender is a real thing, but everybody I know does. And they are just as lost and confused as you are. Seriously.
Yeah. Well, you know, Alyssa Milano... from Charmed fame.
Right.
Also got into trouble for identifying as trans. And I think it was rooted in that rejecting this Victorian age dichotomy of man versus woman.
Yeah.
And like, I am not the Victorian definition of woman.
Yeah.
And therefore, and I'm also not the Victorian definition of man, therefore I am between, I am trans. But the trans identity is also a very specific experience.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult. It's so complicated.
I would say genderqueer is a much larger box than trans.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Like, one of the best approaches, and this is me being, and I hate to alarm you, a bit of a nerd. My favorite approach about masculinity actually comes from Chaucer. Because Chaucer, all the different tales, like, one of the tales was the Reeve's tale. And a Reeve is, like, this medieval bureaucrat, basically.
I thought it was, like, a weed, like a water-based
plant.
That's
a reed, duh.
Oh.
Reeve with a V.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And the Reeve was a carpenter for years and years and years. He was a terrible carpenter. And at that time, carpenters were expected to be sensitive and silent and stoic and emotional. And then after a while, there was an opening to be a Reeve, and he applied for it. And it turned out he was really good at being a Reeve because he was cold and calculating and really good with numbers and really good at that sort of thing. And the whole point of it was that he was not the kind of man to be a carpenter. He was the kind of man to be a Reeve. And embedded in that was this medieval, which is we've lost somehow, notion that there's many types of man. You have stoic men, and that's fine if you are a stoic man. Go into the world where stoic men thrive. If you're the soldier type, that's fine. Go into that. If you're cold and calculating, go into that. That there's types of men.
Mm-hmm.
And type tends to go, you know, like goes with like, and you know, if you meet other men who are similar to yourself, you might be fooled into thinking that all men are like that. But that there's types of men and there's types of women. Some women are strong and independent, some women are nurturing, some women are creative, some women are, I don't know,
codependent.
I don't know. Like, yeah. there's different types, and there's no one box called masculinity and one box called femininity, and this is bloody literary studies plaguing me.
And it's and this is why I wanted to take a bit of time to talk about this, because, you know, Sam Smith has come out as genderqueer, even though the article detailing it refers to him as he consistently throughout. But it's like, essentially, Sam Smith has said, I don't agree with this sort of Victorian era definition of man or definition of woman. Therefore, I opt out of the system. Does that mean that the folks who really can't be, like, don't spend time navel-gazing to assess whether or not they fall in? You know, if you've got somebody who's an athlete with a six-pack who's just like, yeah, I'm a dude, I do dude things,
yeah.
Boobs, beer, whatever you mentioned earlier.
Sports.
Yay, sports.
Sports ball.
Yeah. Is that guy more or less good in this sort of value judgment application? It doesn't matter. I think what matters,
as long as he's a good person who doesn't hurt other people.
Absolutely.
I don't care.
You know, the axe maketh the man, not how you gender identify. But with all that being said, in the LGBT community, there are experiences where folks really are treated badly because they don't fall nicely and neatly into boxes.
Yeah.
And those people who are looking for language to define how they see themselves have come up with the words like genderqueer and gender nonconforming and stuff to kind of frame their experiences of being bullied, of being othered. And as those experiences have become more widely used, the language has become more widely used, other people are starting to use it, but without knowing the history and the context. Mm-hmm. So you may be like, yeah, you know, the Victorians also believed we only had 5 senses. That's been debunked.
Your sense of balance is actually a stronger sense of balance.
Yeah. Also the sense of heat. You know, feeling heat is a sense.
Your sense of whether or not you have indigestion, there's an entire sense completely dedicating to the state of your intestines, which is really peculiar. And
because, weirdly enough, we're not basing our lives on science from the Victorian age.
No, this is Aristotle. We're talking about 2,000 years ago.
But
right?
The heat one, there's been, whatever, the whole point is, we're not in a Victorian dichotomy anymore.
Yeah.
And people aren't boxed up in only manly, only womanly, and do not diverge.
And it's weird because, like, you don't want, like, if somebody says, I'm bisexual because I kissed a girl in college, there's part of you who's like, ooh, it's more to it than that. But on the other hand, if they identify that way, do you have the right to question them? Mm-hmm. And if somebody's like, I reject the Victorian binary, therefore I'm genderqueer. And on the other hand, you're like, maybe it's more complicated than
that.
But
do you need to be wearing pressing flowers and wearing a bra as a lumberjack to be genderqueer? Or can you be a lumberjack with six-pack that plays sports and likes boobs and still be genderqueer without acting on it? And, you know, it's 20... What are we now? 19.
It's current year,
It's current year, insert edit. And what we can really walk away from this conversation, and I'm sure all our listeners are more confused than when they tuned in 10 minutes ago, is that it is so gosh darn complicated.
Yeah.
I really hope that the queer community, the LGBT community at large, doesn't take people like Sam Smith and Alyssa Milano and folks in our community who are trying to find the words and are using the words that have baggage and have meaning and have context, and maybe not using them because they don't know that baggage, meaning, and context. I think we shouldn't cut down people who are trying to find the right language, but rather educate them.
With like, in the case of Sam Smith, like, I do remember reading that, actually. That was, like, about 5 or 6 days ago, right?
Yeah, it was a few days ago,
yeah. And when I read that, all I could think was, you know, I don't see it, but I don't know the guy personally, so let's just wait and see. No skin off my back. I got no reason to reject that.
Oh, and that was the whole point of the show. I mean, I wouldn't normally talk about Sam Smith, but I think it's a really important conversation because there are people up and down this country who are like, is everybody trans? Like, what's going on? I don't even know. And I'm like, you know what? I am with you. I am there with you in your community. You're getting into bed. It's the end of the day. Yeah. And you're like, I don't even know what to do anymore. Am I a woman? I don't. And like, it used to be based on what you were born with. It's just, it's too much. I am sorry for confusing you any even further.
We actually have a mutual friend, and I remember he has very strong opinions about masculinity. During the break, I'll tell you who it is, and you'll be like, oh, him, yeah. But anyway, he once told me that there are as many types of men as there are men.
Mm.
And I think that was such a nice and succinct and pithy way to just say, like, do your own thing, get over it. It's all absolutely good, man.
You do you.
Yeah.
And we'll be back just after our next song, which is Baby Spice has put out a track. I like Baby Spice, and LGBT community likes Emma Bunton specifically.
Should I?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, so how Baby Spice got her name. I learned this recently, that the Spice Girls actually all lived in the same house together for a couple of years before they made it big. To save money and to sort of like get more practice time in and that sort of thing. And all of them were dirt poor, and they all dealt with the fact that they were dirt poor in different ways. So one of my favorites is that Mel B, who's Scary Spice, she basically just ate corned beef and rice for the longest time because corned beef is one of the cheapest meat cuts there are, and then rice is cheap as well. Baby Spice mostly ate baby food.
Or offset her diet with...
No, she did eat other things, but she ate a lot of baby food because it's nutritious and it's cheap, and in the UK it's not taxed. So she ate baby food for a year, and she apparently was like just as energetic as anyone else. But yeah, that's all good. I thought this was an adorable story.
The track "Too Many Teardrops." It's the second single that she's released recently from the album "My Happy Place." Emma Bunton, as far as I'm aware, does not identify as LGBT, but she's in the Spice Girls, so that counts. And we'll be back just after this. Life is a serious game. I don't know the rules you were playing. I gave you the keys to my heart. You tore it apart, and I never thought we'd end. You know that I can't stay. Cause there's too many teardrops I've cried. I could have filled me emotion. Now I'm leaving this heartache behind. I might be bruised, but I won't be broken. There's too many teardrops I've cried over you. Afraid of the fire, but I saw the flames getting higher. I know we started with sparks, but you pushed me too far. But I got my eyes wide open, and I have to walk away. Cause there's too many
take that away. And I've tried to tell you, I'm not a game you can play. Before I lose my mind, it's time to say goodbye. Cause there's too many teardrops I cry. I could have felt me emotion.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And I wanted to actually start off because I mentioned something earlier, and it was about the idea of, you know, you're listening as this when you go to bed. You know, for folks in Vancouver, you could be listening to this on your way home from work, because I think we're in the mid-afternoon. A lot of communities carry this show as a way of letting folks know about the experiences, the news, the communities that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make programming that explains, bridges the gap. I do know that our show last week, where I took Aya with the Catholic school boards in the West Coast, may have ruffled some feathers.
Oh, yes?
But
what, the fact that you disagree with them, or the fact that we question whether or not why they exist?
Well, I think it was the idea of public funds going to support them. I disagree with, but that's neither here nor there. What I wanted to say was, I spoke with one of our stations. It's a rural retirement community station, and the station manager there.
That's fascinating. Yeah, we're on that station.
We're on a whole bunch of them.
Well, hello. How are you?
And the station manager there goes to a women's group.
Okay.
Called the Loose Women of somewhere. Ooh. Which I thought was hilarious. And it was an evening event.
There used to be a
event.
Drag group called the Sisters of Perpetual Motion.
No, they still exist.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. And you see them at Pride. They're the ones that have like the nun type outfits.
The flying nun outfits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's a whole thing still. So Roxanne was telling me that about this this group. And how there was an older lady, and maybe in her 80s, who was like, I was getting into bed, you know, ready to enjoy this usual mix of incredible music that happens at this radio station. And this, you know, there's me and you just gibbering away.
Okay.
She's trying to settle into sleep. We're just now in the way. I mean, I don't even know what we were talking about. But it was like...
Probably the usual nonsense.
The usual nonsense. But what was really interesting was that, and I believe her name was Lorraine, maybe, said, you know, it was interesting. You know, 80-year-old woman in the rural Canada was like, you know what, yeah, that was interesting.
You know, sometimes I have the usual self-esteem issues that any decent human being would have, where I'm like, am I competent? Am I attractive? What am I doing with my life? I don't know what I'm doing. But one thing that I do know is that I am capable of carrying on an interesting conversation. That is one thing that I'm very, very firm on, that I know how to do that. Which is why you agreed to do this with me in the first place.
Absolutely.
And you are way more organized than I will ever be, which is part of the reason why I agreed to do this with you, because I could never get this off the ground on my own.
So there are a lot of other stories that I don't think we'll have time to get to. For example, I think it's Iceland's act may get banned from Eurovision, or from specifically going to Israel.
Really?
Yes, it was the BDSM techno band called Hatari, because in Iceland, many, many, many people signed a petition to pull money out, to divest from the country and businesses within the state of Israel. And that was particularly around Israeli aggression against Palestine.
Mm.
In response to Palestinian aggression against Israel, whether or not it's proportional, who's at fault, we're not going to get into that.
Oh, yeah.
But Israel has laws that particularly that address the divestment movement.
Okay.
So if you have signed or advocated for divesting in Israel, you're actually not allowed to go there.
Okay.
Because why would they want you there, essentially? And it talks about, you know, it's back to Australia, you know. It's not a right to just waltz into other people's countries. Uh-huh. So if, you know, you're being a dick about it, then why would they want you in there? So anyway, Hatari may not be invited because they may have signed this protest.
Interesting, because I was about to say, Iceland is not known for being racy.
Well, but...
I actually wouldn't even necessarily say this is racy, it's just the wrong message for the venue.
So, the German Federal Ministry of Justice is going to start paying compensation to men who have been investigated under the laws of having consensual gay sex before the 1968 abolition in East Germany and the 1969 abolition in West Germany. Apparently, 70,000 people were convicted of consensual homosexual sex acts under the law. They were prosecuted. Many more were prosecuted. So this is, Canada had the gay purge apology, or the gay purge and the apology.
Yeah.
But what's happening now in Germany is that they're literally writing a check, being like, nobody was hurt. Mm. It was consensual. They weren't like freaky acts that would put anybody in danger. It was literally two.
There may have been freaky acts that put people in danger.
But nothing that broke the law.
It was consensual. It was, yeah.
It wasn't an assault. It was people convicted who are in loving couples. And they're like, that was wrong. And we will literally pay the price for it. So that was really interesting, Germany. And I want to end on Dumbledore.
Don't do this to me.
I'm going to do this to you. Me and you have many issues. And actually, I think I may be leaning more on towards your position.
Woo, I win!
Well, every time somebody interviews J.K. Rowling about Dumbledore being gay, because in the books, he's not really gay, never really comes up.
Open mouth, insert foot. Seriously, shut up.
And then she tweets, Dumbledore, she wrote him as gay. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's the context of the character, you know, in her mind, she believes, you know, she doesn't... Do you have to write down every past experience to make it a thing? And I'm like, I was willing to believe that.
Mm.
But every time somebody interviews J.K. Rowling, she just like expands and expands. And she does believe, she apparently said in talking in the bonus features in the Blu-ray release that Fantastic Beasts movie.
Oh, okay.
That there was a sexual dimension to the relationship. And I quote here, it was passionate, it was a love relationship, but it, as happens in any relationship, gay or straight or whatever label we want to put it, no one really knows what the other person is feeling.
There wasn't even any passion between the Weasleys. Yeah. And that was probably the couple we saw the most of in that series. And they were like, do you believe in Rowling's ability to write passion at all?
I mean, I've read her crime series as Robert Galbraith.
I don't think passion and sexual tension is something she's got a talent in.
But what really has been the kickback on this one is that soured relationship between Grindelwald and Dumbledore is now like part of the whole underpinning theory of the movies, and yet there is... zero evidence of that.
Yeah, they've had three movies.
It's like to mild suggestion. So how is this supposed to be? As like, you can't just drum it up and be like, yeah, well, actually, this bit is like super. This bit we never told you that never made it on screen is so important. And it's like, you know what? No, you can't retcon like to that degree. I'm sorry, JK, but
I still think the werewolf thing is the worst. The most egregious sin she's done so far. And it wasn't even a sin, it was just she clearly didn't think it through. The werewolf thing, by the way, is that she claimed that she used lycanthropy, which is being a werewolf, as a metaphor for living with HIV. And a whole bunch of people went through the books to basically be like, okay, every werewolf in the book loved being a werewolf, loved attacking other people, loved making other people into werewolves, except for one who became a werewolf when his father attacked him. Do you really want to sit by this metaphor? Maybe you want to double back on that. And she doubled down and she's like, no, I meant it. Oh, shut up, Rowling. Seriously.
It's not just her. The director, David Yates, has confirmed that apparently the relationship is going to be super important in the later installments. So,
and I hope they do that.
I just have issue with it. You can't just say one line. Dumbledore saying, we were closer than brothers, is suddenly the underpinning for a 5-movie arc? Come on.
That could mean anything.
Absolutely. Anyways, we've been, we're playing out with a Rio May song, because I've been just listening to that album endlessly. This is Not Your Type. I've been Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. And thanks for listening.
I go from fascinating to mildly aggravating. It's early days, but I want you to know, oh, I gotta find my moment. Don't wanna go unnoticed. I like you so, and I want you to know, oh, if you don't like my style, I'll tone it down, I'll tone it down. Don't shut me out. It's hard to get it right when you're around. I'm losing ground, I'm losing ground. You got them lined up, signed up outside your door, but I don't mind, cause I know I want you more. Don't make your mind up about us a minute too soon. You're not wasting my time, even if you decide that I'm not your type. I get so fired up, tired up. Feeling, but babe, what are those feelings? I'm dying to know. Oh, oh, I've always been impatient, but you are worth the waiting. Why does it hurt whenever you go? Oh, oh, if you don't like my style, I'll tone it down, I'll tone it down. Don't shut me out. It's hard to get it right when you're around. You're not wasting my time, even if you decide that I'm not your type. I get so fired up, dialed up. I want you to have everything that you want, everything you like. Am I fooling myself? Is there somebody else running through your mind? You're not wasting my time, even if you decide that I'm not your type. I get so fired up, down.